hey, and welcome to the latest issue of the Three Old Geeks podcast. I am joined once again by the other members of Schomburg's favorite power trio. First of all, the keeper of the inner sanctum, the contrarian and sometimes ruminator, the numbers guy. Keith of Keith's Commerce. Keith, how are you?
Doing great, thanks.
What? No snappy.
No
fan,
snappy, just... no.
Wow. Okay. Man,
this is serious shit. Where the
fuck? Okay, well,
we
got some serious shit going on.
Whoa.
Today. And of course, the non-serious member of the group, the Clown Prince of Collecting, the man who's always wrong and with holes in several of his collections, the Pictures Guy, and the Dirty Old Geek. Brian's one. Brian, how are you?
Sailing, take me away to where I always heard it could be.
No.
See, dude,
no.
I won't sing.
I despise that fucking song, dude.
Did you ever listen to the guitar solo in that?
No, because I can't get past like the first verse because the song sucks.
The guitar solo in that is one of the best guitar solos in like the Everland.
I will give it a
it
listen.
Fucking screams.
In case you can't tell, this is the music episode. And I am, of course, the world's oldest kid sidekick. My name is Lance. I am also the words guy. And
and out of ideas.
And out of words.
There's just so many great song lyrics that from the year we're going to be talking about. I have no idea which one to quote. Here in my car, I'm the safest of all.
Yes.
And welcome to another issue! Brian, other than the fact that 1979 was like one of the best years of music ever, do we have any news?
Yeah, sure. I don't know. We could explore a few years. I bet there's...
We might have to, because this one was...
This was fun.
This was fun.
Well, we'll see when we do the segment. Yeah, I guess... And I'm going to act like I knew all about this, and it was crazy, but... Whoa, what's up, Vince McMahon?
Yeah, he's in a little bit of trouble.
He's in some trouble, yeah.
Shit in some girl's hair?
Something like that.
That's what the lawsuit...
Allegedly.
The lawsuit alleges that he did that.
Yeah. He's old. He just might have had an accident. He overexerted. No. Shit happens.
Oh, just thought it was...
Oops, sorry. Allegedly.
Oh, God.
Do you have any other news?
Nothing like this.
Unfortunately, no. I really don't. And from this, we had some big deaths that happened.
You're not supposed to laugh when you say
that. I know. I'm trying to...
Suck it in, buttercup.
Okay.
Steady yourself.
Let's get a little bit...
Serious?
Yeah, so we did have a few passings that were big for us, I think. First one, Norman Jewison.
You're kidding. I didn't hear that.
Fiddler on the Roof, Jesus Christ Superstar.
Yeah, fantastic director.
Yes.
Musicals, he knows.
He died at 91.
Got it wrong.
Yeah. Did all right. The next one would be Gary Graham, who was in
Alienation.
When I was in college, that was my favorite show.
And Star Trek Enterprise.
Yeah.
Which I've just started rewatching.
He was a Vulcan in Enterprise.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. Sarek, I believe. And then, just because we're mentioning the musical, my wife turned me on to this lady. She's phenomenal. And actually, Miley Cyrus has some great covers of her stuff. But Melanie. I got a brand new pair of roller skates. You got a brand new
key. That's not Janis Joplin? I always thought that was a Janis Joplin song.
No, that's Melanie.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And was it Look What They Did to My Song, Mama? Which is great, and Miley Cyrus does an amazing cover of that song.
Huh.
But check out her work.
Yeah, okay. She's... No, I know this. I know the roller skate song, but yeah. I always thought that was Janis Joplin.
That was Melanie. So, and that's it. That's the big three this week. So, condolences and moment of silence.
So this doesn't end on a downer.
Okay. No moment of silence.
There was a moment of silence in there.
A t-shirt made with that on it. So this doesn't end on a downer.
Listen to three old geeks.
Side B of an EP that Dream Theater put out. They put out a medley of The Rover, Achilles Last Stand, and the song remains the same. It's fucking amazing. I discovered it yesterday. Talk amongst yourselves. All right, in a departure from our typical format of comics, movies, and TV, we have touched on this a couple of times. This is our first formal music conversation for the broadcast. And Brian, you could have not picked a tougher year for this.
Bet you could.
In my, that's a challenge. Find a tougher one.
Okay.
So in the getting to know the geeks flavor here, gentlemen, what are your top three songs from the year of our Lord, and one of the good ones, 1979? And actually, give me a second here, because I was so Jimmy excited. I'm unprepared. All right,
guess
there is
a drop. I'm just trying to figure out
what. Yeah.
Good year.
There is 15 minutes on the timer, and go.
Okay, so number three for me is a song that I'm sure that Lance hasn't even heard of.
Uh-oh.
Sure he has.
He's heard of it, I know. But he does not do country.
Despises it.
And you got
actually
to.
The best country song of all time came out this year.
Ooh, okay. Well, you got to know when to hold 'em.
That's in the running, actually. That's top five.
Know when to walk. The Gambler, Kenny Rogers.
Yes, sir.
That is one of those songs that just sticks with you forever.
And it's one of actually a pretty neat little TV series.
Yeah.
Oh, that he started.
Two or three TV movies.
Yeah, it was. It was a pretty.
He made his money off it.
Yeah, and Bruce Boxleitner was a sidekick.
Yes, he was.
It was a pretty neat little cowboy deal.
I think he had one better song than that for me. But we may go into it later, so I don't want to. Depending on how this goes, we may do it again, guys.
I am.
I had fun with it.
I am sort of lancing mine.
Okay.
I did then. In 1979, what were my favorite songs?
Okay.
And now.
Ooh. Cause look at the big brain on Keith here. I wish I would have done that.
Well, I didn't have the opportunity to listen to as much stuff as I have now. So there's stuff that I didn't even know existed back then.
Okay.
And my dad used to listen to a lot of country music, so that's going to influence this a little bit. But yeah, probably when I was 14. Wow, that's a long time
ago. I was 9.
I then would be a song that it made it on the radio. It made it on charts, I believe. The theme song to Dukes of Hazzard, Good Old Boys.
Just some is good that old Waylon boys. Jennings?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
Yes, and because it was playing all the time, and you saw the show every week. So, yeah, I probably drove my mom crazy singing it when it was on. So, yeah, that was That was then. This
is
about now.
This time that the skunk got into the pepper pot. the voiceover on that show was fucking brilliant.
I can't laugh like Roscoe Pico.
Q, 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 Q. That cast was fucking amazing.
Yes. And then probably my, because I went back and forth on all of these, my number three for now. Is Heartbreaker by Pat Benatar.
Ah.
I love that song.
That's a good one.
I love it. It's
she said she won't do it in concert anymore.
Really?
Yeah. She's like, there's something wrong with a 60-year-old woman singing that song.
Yeah. Well, back
and
in
she's
the,
been doing it for
and back
years.
In the day, she was a goddamn heartbreaker.
Oh, yeah, no kidding. Yeah. So, what are yours?
Considering she married her high school sweetheart and is still married to him.
Neil Giraldo.
Yeah.
His guitar player.
Yeah.
God bless
him. All right. Well, Brian, you picked the year in which there are four, literally, my favorite song from X Band. There are four of them from this year. So, as my number, I'm going to actually lance this one because these are two of my, and when I say minor, there are two from the album Just a Game, Triumph's Hold On,
Oh.
And from the seminal, classic, cultural-changing
Dirty?
I think
London Calling by The Clash. Not the song that you think. Train in Vain. That is, I don't know what that song
mainly
is.
Mainly on the plane?
Shut up. I don't know what, that is not a punk song. That is an old rock song with some funk and some harmonica and some blues. I love that song without even knowing who The Clash were. I mean, like, talk about, like, I heard that on the radio and I was like, who are these guys? And then just discovered, oh, they're like one of the godfathers of punk.
Yeah.
But they made this great, like, this great rock song, you know.
Yeah, that was a ridiculous part about when we were in 79 is hearing these things and you didn't know who did them.
Yeah.
Unless they had the whole the
you had to hear
the jockey jockey saying that was this, you had no clue. You're like, who the fuck is it? You couldn't Shazam it, you couldn't go online.
And he had to say it afterwards, because if he said it before, you weren't always listening.
Yeah. And sometimes they play four songs, and that was this, this, and this, and okay, which one?
But that's just one of those. You can tell it's the music he grew up with.
Yeah,
yeah.
And so, because they also did "I Fought the Law," which maybe
exactly, list. And it turned it into, like, I bet you more people know the Clash version of that than the Buddy Holly version of that. So,
for me, number two,
yes,
from the Boomtown Rats. I Don't Like Mondays. It's still on my playlist today.
Wow. I have not heard that song. That's a great song, though.
It it sounds like a song that would have come from a musical.
You're right.
Yeah, it sounds like it would come from a musical. Not, but the Boomtown Rats, it was really their only hit in the States.
Yeah, I mean, they were bigger in the UK.
It was about school shooter.
I remember that. I think I remember hearing that was based off of a real thing
in San Diego, and that they asked. It was a girl.
Yeah.
And when they caught her, they asked her why she did it, and she said, "I don't like Mondays." And that was
kind of a melancholy song.
Yeah. Though no, when you listen to it, it's upbeat.
But what it's based on,
yeah,
it's like really.
No, that's one of those. If you dig into the lyrics, it's
it hits you a little harder. But a great song, and yeah, I don't like Mondays.
You don't. I love Mondays. They're my day off. It's the only day off I have, so I love Mondays. Not that I don't love being here in the store, but okay, my second Lance. Lance the Second, if you will. it's going to be ridiculous for when I was 14, because we'd taken the bus to school. The bus driver would always have on the same radio station.
Okay.
Which was a loop with Steve Dahl. And they would occasionally play Weird Al's My Bologna, because My Sharona came out the same year. And he came out with it pretty quickly, and they would play
that might have been one of the first Weird Al's.
I think it is his first. It is his first one that actually hit, and Dr. Demento played it, but because Dahl would play a lot of weird. We'd be singing that stupid song. But yeah, so for number two for 14-year-old me, that was cool.
That explains so
much.
And
this is why I own a comic shop, because that's where it began.
Yeah.
If anyone else thinks it's cool, stop. Change your mind. Find something better. my number two for me now is, went back and forth on this a couple times. I love, every time it comes on, I'll sing along with it. Gloria Gaynor's I Will Survive. No one likes it? Okay.
I sing it loud.
What? One of the great voices. Like, okay. That gal's got
points. Well, everyone just stopped. I'm like, okay, did I?
But no, I had to think about that. Well, no, it was one of those ones that kind of, I was coming out of left, like, oh, shit, yeah, that's a good song,
That was a left fielder.
Yeah. That's fucking awesome.
Yes.
And it helped watching Replacements. They resurrected that, and Brandon sat and listened to it until he knows all the words. Don't you, Brandon?
I'm busy working.
Okay. Someone had to.
He will survive.
At first, I was petrified.
All right. Well, I could not live for that. From one of the greatest live albums of all time, recorded in Chicago.
Blues Brothers?
Live album. Live album. This has been on my playlist for since there have been playlists. This is on a mixtape somewhere in my basement.
Along with the body of the girl.
He was dating at the time.
Recorded by an 18-year-old guitar wizard by the name of Michael Schenker and his band UFO. Lights Out.
Lights Out. Lights Out. London.
I've made reference before that the blood doesn't get pumping very much anymore for my 50-plus-year-old body. You put this song on, I'll go fight somebody. This fucking song is unbelievable.
You stole my number one, you mother... Oh.
It's about time I stole one of yours.
Okay, bitch. I guess so. Is it one of your ringtones?
Not one of my ringtones.
See? Fuck you.
Oh. I guess you don't really love it.
I only have
two. He doesn't want to get his blood pumping too much.
Yeah, I don't want to get my blood pumping too much.
He starts driving and that comes on.
Oh, dude. I'm driving when that comes on. I'm doing 90 and I don't
He's
even realize it.
He's going 35 to 40. Right there.
Brian, what is your number one?
Number one, I am going to Lance, because I have to.
You have to.
Yeah, because this song gave me a love for this group. I had to have the album, and I bought the wrong one. And so that increased my love for this group. And that would be Brass in Pocket from The Pretenders.
Great song.
Yeah, it's off of Pretenders 1. For some reason, I didn't know the name of the song, so I bought Pretenders 2, which made me fall in love with The Pretenders, though it didn't have the song I was obsessed with. And so I had to go back buy that. Yeah. So, but I love The Pretenders. Brass in Pocket. And then the other, and this is my second favorite Zeppelin song, Fool in the Rain.
Oh, from Presence. A departure, and the reggae rhythm section of that is fucking mind-blowing.
And the words, when I learned the lyrics, which took me a while for some reason, but once I figured out the lyrics... Because, again, yeah, we didn't just have them online, guys.
You had to look at the album liner notes.
If they had them in
if
there.
If they had them in there.
You just keep on listening to it. Yeah. Okay, what did he say?
You had to listen to it, and you had to pick up.
Get a committee of people. What do you think he said?
Yeah.
Excuse me while I kiss this guy. That's one that I forgot about. That's actually a really good one.
Oh, yeah. That just starts now. A blood pumper for me. And it still gets played quite a bit. Actually, both those songs. Dude, how funny is that? Jesus Lord.
Jesus Lord.
You have taste.
Dear Lord. Now, 45 years ago.
Yeah, you have taste. Now we go to me.
tell me why not.
Okay, this again, probably, possibly because it's a TV show. I don't know if it was on. When I was younger, I liked Billy Joel a lot. And My Life was always one of my favorite songs.
Oh, yeah.
It was also the one from Bosom Buddies.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
So, yeah, that's why when I was thinking back, yeah, I remember listening to that song.
79?
79. Wow. The single came out in 79.
Okay.
So that's when it was making it on the radio. Because not all of us had record players back then. My dad had a reel-to-reel that you try to find something to
he
put on a reel-to-reel.
He lived himself on a dirt floor.
Yeah.
He didn't have no...
No,
I didn't
get a stereo till I was 16.
I didn't get me a needle.
So
I just had me a.
Guys were all cool. I had to listen WJJD all day every day. WBBM. So it was either news or country.
WBBM.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. W.
Go on 6-hour rides up to Wisconsin, listening to all that stuff. Hank Williams Sr. singing "Swinging." We'll be swinging. I'll be swinging off the yeah. So I guess since my number one was taken or borrowed,
Alan Jackson.
What? What's that? Alan Jackson.
Yeah, I thought he did it.
Did he remake Swingin'?
Yeah,
it was Hank Williams Sr. I know that. A lot of Oak Ridge Boys and all that shit.
Oh.
Elvira,
Papa, Betty, Mau.
We should stop because he's gonna kill us. I'll just go straight up Highway to Hell.
That entire record.
Yeah.
Yes. Bon Scott record.
Yes.
to me, but, Girls Got Rhythm is the standard on that one. But that's a fucking
Night Stalker.
They're all good. You're all pretty. You're all pretty.
You're all pretty.
Naked. All right. Like a body in a tomb.
The reason I am good or bad is because of Judas Priest. I was introduced to them on Screaming for Vengeance. I've since gone back and just, you know, listened to their entire catalog or whatever. So, my favorite heavy metal band is Judas Priest. My favorite song by Judas Priest, Victim of Changes, live version, Unleashed in the East. It has got everything. It is a banquet of metal goodness. It has got textures. It has got different parts to it. It's absolutely...
It's like a bowl of ramen.
It's a bowl of ramen.
He's the word guy.
It is literally the greatest heavy metal song, in my opinion, of all time.
Ooh. Well, that's however, all we're looking for is your opinion.
There are a few minutes left. This was a great year. We got to get some honorable mentions out of the way here.
Oh, Rock and Roll Fantasy from Bad Company. That was off their last album. Their last album with Paul Rodgers.
You said The Gambler. I like Coward of the County.
That's his best song.
Yeah. That's
another great storytelling song.
Yes. Devil Went Down to Georgia.
Obviously, Devil Went
Down to Georgia. One of the greatest storytelling songs of all time, and in my opinion, the greatest country song of all time.
Crazy Little Thing Called Love from Queen.
Yep.
And Bicycle Race.
Don't Stop Me Now.
Don't.
Which I love. Stop Me Now.
Corrupted by Apple.
Corrupted by
Donna
Apple.
Summer ruled the airwaves, and I love Donna Summer. So
yeah, she had four top 100.
Yeah,
including one with Babs Streisand.
Couldn't believe
I'd never heard.
I've never heard that. Never even. Yeah. They did.
Yeah. No. And this was the start of Tom Petty. So
Tom Petty's first record.
Yeah.
And Babe, don't forget
Babe. I'm leaving.
The start of the power ballad.
Say it once again. Yes, the beginning of the power ballads and the downfall of Styx.
What else you got?
Van Halen 2 came out this year. Yes. Beautiful Girls. That's my favorite off of that one. When you play this, Brian, I could not believe that this came out in 79 because this, to me, is like the ultimate 80s song. In Cars by Gary Numan and the Two Boy Army.
Yes. Yes.
And the Cars' second album, Candy O. So you've got the two singles, Let's Go and All I Can Do. And then there was a band out of Athens, Georgia. They were kind of a novelty act.
Smothers Brothers? No, sorry.
No, they did 60s, kind of weird 60s surf rock punk covers.
Yeah.
Little band with a couple of female singers. Yeah. The B-52s.
Rock Lobster?
Rock Lobster and Planet Claire.
Oh.
Both of them are... If you just know them from their pop, you know, like the 80s videos and pop stuff, and they're not even I actually like the pop B-52s, but when they were young and they were, like, doing punk rock stuff and, like, ironically doing, like, the big hair 60s stuff.
Yes.
They were fucking fantastic, dude.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that was a ton of fun. That was our favorite songs from 1979. Let us know what yours are.
You voted the best. You got the best. The hottest band in the land. Who's a hammer?
Bitches.
All right, so we didn't have a series at the time, so we decided to watch a throwback, and that is Hammer's House of Horror from 1980, and we just watched episode 10 entitled Guardian of the Abyss.
Woo-hoo.
An antiques dealer gets caught up in a cult of human sacrifice, which seeks to conjure Coronazon when he unwittingly gains possession of John Dee's mirror with mysterious evil powers. Da-da-da.
John Dee from DC?
No.
Oh, shit.
I
misread.
That's John Dee is
Destiny.
Dr. Destiny.
Yeah, yeah.
No, John Dee was a alchemist and a magician and a mathematician and all the things that they cited in the episode. He's kind of like Ptolemy or something like that. He's kind of legendary folklore guy.
That changes the whole episode for me.
So yeah, this is the whole.
They brought up Crowley.
They had an Aleister Crowley reference.
Enochian?
You know what they did not bring up, which I thought was interesting, was Nostradamus. Because that was Nostradamus' gig. He looked in a scrying glass and came up with
his quatrain. I thought, wasn't his scrying glass like a bowl of water or something like that? I thought I read that.
I thought it was one of those.
No, this is one of those cool, like, upper crusty British, cult conspiracy. I love these.
They threw so much. There's voodoo aspects and Wiccan aspects, and no, you're not. No,
they just it was they threw a bunch of of folk magic stuff into a blender.
Yes.
You know, they had like the fetish dolls with the and the, like the guys manipulating the what's her name to kiss the freaking antiques dealer and stuff with the
then
voodoo.
They put the chicken blood on him and he's wiping it off his chest in his sleep, and I don't know why that made no sense.
I liked the when the head of the cult goes and confronts the and he was doing the Jedi mind tricks on him.
Yes,
and then and then totally like.
Don't drink his wine.
Don't give us black sorcerer wine, bread and salt.
So bread and salt, yeah. He'll control you.
Like, which actually they used in...
And then it turned out he was just getting fucked over by her.
Yeah, pretty much.
Oh, that's so she didn't have to die.
But they used the bread and salt in Game of Thrones.
Oh.
That was like the ritual hospitality, like, okay, you're under my house and under my protection type of thing. And you eat his bread and salt. That was at least in the books. I don't remember being in the...
They didn't put it in the...
Then they get high blood pressure and have a heart attack right there. And that was the plan.
But
diabetes
and
high blood pressure.
So
good plan.
The end is kind of like Dollar Store Wicker Man.
Yeah, it was Wicker Man. Like, what the hell?
Yeah, it was...
Although I did like the... he like transmogrifies into the demon... And then and does the Lon Chaney and goes backwards and then back into the guy. I thought that was actually pretty good for an 80s TV show, you know?
Yes.
Yeah.
We got to bring up, what's her name?
What's her name? She was the best.
She was the best. She was the best.
We're talking Rosalind Landor?
Yes, Rosalind Landor from... and anybody who knows Star Trek Next Generation, Brianne O'Dell from Up the Long Ladder. It's one of the best.
Oh, okay.
Star Trek Next Generation episodes.
Yeah, I recognize him from old Sherlock Holmes with Jeremy Brett.
The foot washing scene. But you get to see a little more of her in this. I'm saying.
Yeah, this was Hammer.
This was Hammer.
A little saucy.
A little special sauce.
You literally can make anything sound dirty. You have that rare talent, Brian. You really do.
That's why I'm here.
You could only use it for good.
That's why I'm here. That's why you guys have me.
But yeah, no, it was a cool, like, I really like the manor houses with the cult and the guys with the cowls on and stuff like that. And
I noticed that... when she ran past, there was a part where she ran past the door, and it was an arch door on a white wall, and it was the same setup it was the same door in the vampire episode, where the one where the vampires come out of the, I can't remember what movie it was, but the three vampires.
Oh, Satanic Rites of Dracula?
Yes. Yes.
Or was it the old one, or was it the one with the circus, or was it?
No, it was the older one. It was the one where they had the they kidnapped a girl and they brought her to the secretary. And they brought secretary and she was chained to the wall.
Satanic Rites of Dracula.
To get into the basement.
Yeah.
That was the same. She ran past that same...
I'm
sure they reused those.
They reused sets all the time.
They bought a manor house.
Oh, did they?
They bought an actual manor house where they filmed.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, because it was cheaper to do than it was to film in London.
Yeah, or lease it or whatever, yeah.
So they had a manor house that they actually filmed.
Dude, are you kidding? You know how much, like, the people who actually own the Downton, like, the Downton Abbey house, they get paid, like, fucking £1 million a season or something.
Own that house, they got to be pretty well off to begin with.
No.
Actually, there's a whole documentary about...
it's the Lord Carnarvon.
Lord Carnarvon's house. And
he's the guy who discovered.
They literally have to rent it out in order to. It's like the maintenance on it is like fucking $150,000 a year. Or something. Yeah. That's maintenance.
They make their money off of tours and weddings, but all of them that own those have to do that because they don't make the money that they used to make.
Yeah,
because
they used to be
Downton Abbey times.
That was like the landowners, like the farmers would, you know, like the. Itinerant farmers would like pay them to farm the land and stuff like that.
And then you would make the money off the crops and the this and that, but they don't do that anymore. They were really self-sufficient, but they don't. Yeah, that's not a thing anymore. So a lot of them don't have money because now they've inherited
but they're saddled with this fucking house that they gotta. And yeah, they lucked out on the Downton Abbey because that got huge, and now they make.
You would think that we're getting way off the subject, but you would think that that was Lord Carnarvon's manor house.
Yes.
You'd think that just for the historical significance of that cat that they would want to see it or whatever. And I got to think there's some Egyptian shit
there is.
There.
Oh, no, there's King Tut shit in there.
Oh, okay. Because
he got a bunch of it. Yeah, no, down in the basement. They have all the King Tut shit. But he didn't make a whole lot off the King Tut thing. I don't know that he made the money back that he spent.
On the expedition, I doubt it.
He died.
Well, he was one of the ones that got
fairly
taken.
Quick.
He got taken by Tut's curse, man.
Yeah, he got stung by a mosquito. And then he cut open the thing, it got infected, and he died. But he never saw the house again. He died in Egypt. I don't know that he saw all the treasures come out before he was dead. Before he was
dead. This is a happy, happy day today.
Well, we're talking about curses and voodoo, monkey chicken shit. Just could you throw more at it? The fucking.
It was basically blood. It was like folk magic, blood. You know, like blood magic and fetishes, and
I love where he goes,
"Master, may I do it? Yes, you have earned it."
Thunk. I love this. They all die the same way in Hammer films.
It was actually. I thought this was a pretty good episode. This was.
It was.
I would lump this into the better of the episodes we've watched so far.
You know what?
It definitely had a Hammer feel to me.
It was one of those where you get the twist of him going to do this, and you know you're like, okay, yeah, she's hot. She's Brianna O'Dell.
Yeah.
From Up the Long Ladder. She's hot, but I don't know that I would throw away everything for her.
I saw the ending coming. I'm like, oh, okay, he's
that antique dealer.
I actually didn't. I was pleasantly surprised. I did not see the
Wicker Man-esque. So
I saw that coming. I didn't see them and how they twisted the. Did he come eagerly?
Yeah.
Yes, he did. He wanted to save me.
Does he have those?
I can just imagine like, oh bloody hell! We'll just rip off the Wicker Man. The script done.
Yes. Yes.
We could do it better. Add a chicken. We've got this. Add a chicken.
Oh my god.
And Brianna O'Dell.
And we have dinner too.
Yes.
Yes. Salted bread and scrying mirrors.
Okay, Morocco.
Morocco Mole?
Morocco Mole. All right, so this was one of the better ones, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, give it a watch. Let us know what you think. For Sunday afternoon Kung Fu Theater, we watched, well, in the original version, it's an all-time classic. The version that Brian and I watched, it's not. And we are talking 1993's The Heroic Trio, directed by legendary action films director from Hong Kong, Johnny To, screenplay by Sandy Shaw, and starring the triumvirate of Michelle Yeoh, Anita Mui, and Maggie Chung. This is the reason I am in. This was my gateway drug to the three of them, but specifically Michelle Yeoh. This and Super Cop 2. And this is Hong Kong superhero film from the 90s. So you have Wonder Woman, Anita Mui. As the Batman stalker of rooftops in the night, you have the starting off villainous Invisible Woman, Michelle Yeoh. And then you have the Lobo bounty hunter, Maggie Chung, who's known as Thief Catcher. And so the evil emperor of the underworld is stealing babies because when he gets 20 of them, one of them will become the evil emperor that will take over the earth. Michelle Yeoh works for him. Her and her sister were sort of half. She was raised fully by him,
But her sister left early and thus became a superhero. And I don't know if this is your first time watching this. I hadn't watched this one in years. I watched the really shitty English dub version. Keith bought the DVD. Thank you for letting me borrow because see the actual version because the dub on this is so bad. Like, Brian, I think you were saying, it's not even really a story.
There isn't a story to this. It was too hard to follow on YouTube. So if you're going to watch this, do not watch it on YouTube.
Or don't watch the free English version on YouTube. Like, yeah. I mean, unfortunately, I think this is on Criterion right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you're going to have to pay for it. But, yeah, the YouTube version, if you want just the action of it, watch that. But the English dub is terrible.
You know what? I found the sets to be interesting. A little sparse. They could have done a bit more with them. It was
a little
cheap.
There were some parts where they were a little gothic.
Very gothic. That's what I mean. I wish they would have gone a little further, pushed that a little further. The hospital scenes. But the one where they kill the baby was just
Yeah,
and then later on, this gets worse. I got dynamite. Take care of those kids.
Well, I like the fact that, and it was in the English dub version, but it was like Ratcatcher like kidnaps a kid for the money.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. I'll do ransoms.
Yeah.
I don't.
Bounty
hunter. Exactly. I could not figure out what was going on with the scientist.
Okay. Well, that was the whole thing. Was okay. So Michelle Yeoh's boyfriend or partner or whatever you want to put it was the creator of the invisible cloak or whatever.
And that she wore.
The bad guy wanted it because, you know,
he wanted for the new emperor or whatever. And it was and the process that he was making was toxic, so he was getting sick from it. And by the way, played by James Pock, who you might recognize as Lightning.
Yeah.
From Big Trouble in Little China.
Oh!
I knew it was Lightning. I didn't know his name. So when you said James Pock earlier, I'm like,
I'm flashing through. I will never forget to this day when I first put some holy shit, that's Lightning from. But
as if that was his only role in movies.
Probably when it matters.
But So and then the other thing that I always wanted to know was what is like. And then we had the throwing Batarangs. Knives or whatever the batarangs or whatever. The way she kind of cast a shadow on. I wanted to know if there was some significance, like if that was like a kanji or something like that, like it meant something.
Yes.
Because I thought that was really interesting.
And it seemed to me that it would have. And then it was a tattoo that matched with her sister.
Yeah.
And that's how they knew. You are my sister. Okay. I will not let you go this time.
It's pretty much what it sounds like, just to let you know.
Yeah. Yeah, the English dub basically is that bad. It's literally Brian doing Monty Python drag.
Oh, I wish they would hire Brian. At least there'd be some fun to it.
I would have been excited. Yeah, it was. My wife just looked at it and went, "Are you kidding me?" This is
the thing that gets me is that '93 was like Jurassic Park, right?
Or sometime right after Jurassic Park, yeah,
and Hong Kong had not caught up with the United States I mean, this was old school, like 60s Green Hornet, like I'm shooting a bullet and I'm throwing a knife to split it. And it was like, well, we have a bullet on glass and we're going to move the camera behind it.
Yeah.
And then we're going to run the knives also on glass into the bullet. And it was just, and the wire, this did not, as far as like the special effects did not age well on this.
No, at the end, especially.
With
Michelle Yeoh and her Evil Dead guy suit.
Evil Dead, the original Evil Dead had better special effects.
Oh my God. I had forgotten. And now I'm remembering. He's taking me over!
I paused it for a reason. And I said, I actually looked at him like, I paused it to do something. I'm like, oh yeah, that's just like a coat with a suit with like this.
And then they'd hit the vertebrae.
I'm not hitting you. He's forcing me to hit you. So yeah, they defeat the emperor of the what do they call him? The evil master. Yeah,
he's making his body is gone, but his essence is here.
And Yeah, they had the throbbing, like the throbbing brain in the skull, which was
the worst aneurysm ever.
That was, yeah, it was so fucking bad.
I actually, first time I saw it, well, not first time I saw it, first time I saw it again, I thought that was like probably Thief Catcher blew his brains out with a gun. But no, that was just the throbbing thing exploding. I'm like, wait, what?
It was fucking horrible.
I mean, I remember seeing this in, I want to say 94.
Yeah, I saw it 90
at a music theater.
I saw it 90 music box. This I was think. One of my Chinatown purchases on videotape. I still have it. Unfortunately, I don't have a videotape.
Well, I went out and got the videotape after that. But yeah, I remember seeing it. I remember it being like just entranced by it. And then
it doesn't hurt that three of the more beautiful women in the world in the 90s were doing action in this.
Yes, and I was what 20. Yeah, so. No, I was 30. Shit, never mind. This is a poor
emotionally,
point.
You were 16.
Emotionally, I'm 14. So I'm digressing now. Have you heard the podcast?
Every decade.
But, yeah, it. I remember seeing it. I bought the video cassette. I watched the video cassette. And then, yeah, it sat.
Collected dust for the next 20 years.
I opened
years.
The store, and yeah, it's just sat.
30 years? God, this movie is that old. Jesus Christ.
It's 30 years old, yeah. I saw it about 30 years ago now.
But, so. Launched the careers of, I mean, Anita Mui and Maggie Cheung were both pop singers.
Okay.
But launched the career of Michelle Yeoh. And then this got her Super Cop 2, which she could hang with Jackie Chan, and that cemented her as the action star that she is or whatever.
I did see an interesting interview with Michelle Yeoh. She did do a... prior to with Jackie Chan, early Jackie Chan,
really?
Yeah, a watch commercial.
You're kidding?
No, he's riding by on a bicycle. She's on like a moped, and they pass each other, and then Jackie Chan falls off his bike.
Oh,
because he's so in love with her,
and his watch survives.
It's a it's a watch commercial.
I'm gonna have to dig that up on YouTube.
Yeah, I think BD or B&D, something like that. But yeah, that was. And how she got into the action side of it.
Well, she legitimately rides a... Put Super Cop 2 down on the list, dude.
Oh, I wrote Super Cop. It was next week.
Oh, okay.
Because that
Spoilers!
Was...
Spoilers!
Watch it, and then you'll enjoy this even more.
But yeah, this does not age well. However, you cannot argue with the star power of this one. I mean, just three... I mean, hopefully this... Launched, put them into the. I mean, I'll put Michelle Yeoh into my public consciousness. Yeah. But man, oh man, it just a throwback to an earlier, simpler time, if you will. I'd like to see somebody remake this.
Yes, this could
with
be
modern
remade.
Sensibilities. Yeah. You could really do something damage with this one.
Yeah. This deserves call them
Wonder
it.
Woman or Invisible
yeah,
Woman.
Yeah,
you'd run into some troubles
there.
There'd
be some legal issues with that.
Not if you used. There's three names for each, so
yeah,
you could use other names.
You could. I'm just saying you can't use Wonder Woman.
No, you Invisible can't use Wonder Woman. You can't use Wonder Woman.
Thiefcatcher, maybe.
Actually, dude, they were copyrighted at the time. I wonder if it was something where they weren't copyrighted in Hong Kong.
Well,
or
that's
something
probably
like
why. No one's gonna spend the money to cease and desist over in China. Yeah, they're just not gonna. So, a lot of weird shit get made overseas that never seeks legal action. So,
yes.
And you had to go to your Chinese connection to get the video cassette. So yeah, it was not.
Yeah, that's true.
A Chinese connection. He's so
God,
cool.
And that was another interesting thing. Michelle Yeoh does not read Chinese. She speaks some dialects of Cantonese and Mandarin, but not proper, more casual. But she does not read Chinese.
Huh. I know. And, she was raised in London, I believe, or England.
She was a Malaysian beauty queen, 1983.
I thought I read that she spent...
Miss Malaysia.
I thought she... I read she spent...
She might have.
Her teenage years in England. Whatever. It doesn't matter. She's a freaking star. She's getting Academy Awards, and she deserves them, damn it. And
she's still gorgeous.
And she's still... And
30 years later, still...
30 years later, she's
amazingly
still...
Amazingly stunning and great actress.
Although, when she was, in her 20s?
Yeah. Okay.
Dude,
yeah.
I would have crawled through a mile of broken glass just to drink her bathwater. Jesus Christ.
Well, it's kind of late for that.
Not on these knees. That's all I can tell exactly. you. Not on these
Let's
knees.
Let's get the time machine fired up.
Yeah.
Lance has got some drinking to do.
There's lust in these knees. It's all not right. gonna happen.
My love for Michelle Yeoh aside, this did not age well. I'm gonna watch the actual Chinese language one with subtitles because the story on YouTube, the English dub is terrible.
It was so hard to follow what was going on that I really didn't know through the whole thing what was going on. I would love to see it remade. I would love to see it remade with the same sensibilities that it had.
Like to see it a little bit more, a little, like you were saying, a little bit more gothic.
Yes.
You know, a little more, Batman, yes. You know, cause then you got the really cool, kind of Chinese sorcery, Chinese mythology, the Big Trouble element to it or whatever.
Some awesome things with this.
Yeah. Cause those sets were nothing. Hanging fucking bird cages.
Hanging bird cages with baby dolls in them. Right?
Yeah,
but yeah. Just for the its place in history, I'm gonna call this a. I mean, it got made. Okay, let's put it this way: it got made. It's, Michelle Yeoh, that's so a star hard. And a half. That's two and a half. So Anita Mui, that's another star. Maggie Cheung, that's another star. So that's
like five,
four. That's a 4.5 star
it's
movie.
12 stars just because of girls.
Jesus Christ! No, I'll go 3 stars because it has potential.
I'll go 3.5.
All right,
I'll give one each for the girls, and then half a star because
it got
me. Yeah, I mean, old me would have gave it like 4.5, but yeah, now I've seen it again. No. It's unfortunately.
All right. Well, if you want to watch this one, don't watch the free one on YouTube. Spend the dough, get the real one. That was Heroic Trio. Give it a watch. Let us know what you think. So this year is starting off great because, Brian, you're making my heist movie dreams come true. And we watched one of my favorites, and that is 1964's Top Copy, starring...
You want to spell that for the people?
Yeah, it's T-O-P-K-A-P-I. It is a museum in Istanbul.
Yes.
It was directed by the heist legend, the director of... Rafifi, Jules Dassin, written by Monia Deniszewski, good Irish name, based on the novel The Light of Day by Eric Ambler, and starring Melina Mercouri, Peter Ustinov, who won an Academy Award for this, Maximilian Schell, Robert Morley, and it's got a bunch of other great character actors, Akeem Tamarov, Dassin's son Joe was the leader of the carnival
who died tragically young, but made it big as a French singer.
And so you've got this is the difference between a heist movie and a caper movie is a caper movie is a little lighter, and this is more of a caper movie. Yes. So you have Elizabeth Lipp. Obsessed with emeralds, wanting to steal the jeweled dagger of Sultan Mahmud I from the Topkapi Museum in Istanbul. She recruits the Swiss mastermind, Walter Harper. The Maximilian Schell, I know him from this, and I gotta look at his catalog. I know him from this, I know him from The Black Hole.
I just watched him last week in the Nuremberg Trials.
He is fantastic, dude.
Oh, he's amazing in that. Though he's eclipsed by a couple of people that.
Yeah, I've seen the room.
Montgomery Clift and Judy Garland in that playing the survivors.
But yes, they recruit the great and this is almost to your heist movie. They want people with no records. So police when the police look at this heist, they'll go, "Who? There's 10 guys that could have pulled this off." Let's look at them instead of a bunch of not even amateurs, but kind of common criminals or whatever. They have a human flyer. They have a strong man. They have the wonderful Robert Morley as Cedric Page, the mechanic, if you will. Yeah. And they recruit the small-time hustler Arthur Simon Simpson, Peter Ustinov, to kind of be the decoy, if you will. he gets picked up by the Turkish.
Dude, yeah.
Yeah, he gets picked up by the Turkish authorities when they're driving their beautiful 1962 Chrysler Imperial convertible. Oh, I love that car. And they think that he is.
You need a moment?
I do need a moment because that car is fucking fantastic. It fits six people in a convertible, dude.
And
that's
then
fucking
tearing great. It apart at one point.
And there's the Turkish authorities pull him over and find that there are arms in the hidden in the door card of the grenades and a rifle. And one of the great lines is, "I never liked that rifle. It interferes with my artistry." Fucking great.
Didn't there were a line. Couple lines.
Didn't
in that
even know that door panel was an option in that car.
Yeah. And so yes, it's kind of a lighter heist, if you will. However, the strongman's hands get busted
by the drunken cook.
By the drunken cook
who's trying to fuck
Akeem,
Peter Houston off.
Yeah, Akeem. Yeah, he was.
There was something.
He was all over the place. The wonderful Akeem Tamroff, he's the boss in the guy who sponsors the original Ocean's 11, so he's got a special place in my heart. But so they have to recruit Peter Houstonoff, who's just a hustler,
yeah,
into doing the strongman, and that's the most interesting part of this. The part I love the most about this movie is they rope another guy into doing the specialized bit in the heist, and again, it's this lighthearted, you know, kind of a romp until it gets to the heist. And then it's Jules Dassin, and it's a fucking heist. And it's a fucking you cannot tell me this did not influence, like, Mission Impossible.
Definitely.
This was the absolute.
Yeah.
This was the absolute. Mission Impossible is based on this.
You're kidding.
Yeah, this is where Mission Impossible comes from.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that.
And the guy who created and did Mission Impossible has said that this was this movie.
Oh, okay.
This was Mission Impossible.
Yeah, so they have to break into this ancient museum. There is one of the best... is it acrophobia, where you're afraid of heights? So Peter Ustinov is...
I believe so, yeah. Yes.
They have to scramble across a huge expanse of rooftops to get to the point where they can break into the museum. It is... I literally was grabbing my, because I'm kind of like that. I am not good with uncontrolled heights like that, like being on a roof or something like that. It was as good of one of those scenes as I think I've ever seen. As far as conveying the tension of being afraid of heights.
Yes. Peter Ustinov was fucking brilliant.
Well, okay. One of the indictments that they made about this is he won 3 Academy Awards in like 4 years or something like that. And this was one of the ones where they kind of said, this is the old Hollywood voting for their guy, where the whole start of the whole, you know.
Yeah.
I'm wondering who was running against him in that. Who was? Because he was brilliant, so I can't see it have to be something awesome where they go, oh, maybe he shouldn't have won.
He played Hercule Poirot in 3 movies, so.
Which was funny, and that was one of the little fun facts, is when he's walking down the dock and he's talking to the people, one of the things he says is, I speak Belgium, which is not a language.
Yeah.
But it was 3 years later that he did the famous Belgian detective,
Hercule Poirot. And did a wonderful job, if you've seen, if you've watched those.
But yes, the Turkish authorities recruit Arthur into kind of spying on the gang.
Mm-hmm.
And they mistake them for terrorists that are going to attack the military day parade or something like that. And
yes.
It takes till the very end to figure out that, they're part, and it's a great... They pull off the heist perfectly, and it's the typical one thing that they didn't account for was a bird getting into where they broke in, and it sets off the alarm, and things develop from there. So it's unusual for a heist movie where the drama leads up to the heist goes off perfectly, and then like the last 5 minutes are the repercussions of the heist, and it's very light.
And nobody died.
Died, and you know nobody double crossed anybody, and you know. So, hence more of a caper than a heist.
I love that she starts with Elizabeth Lipp is not my name, but that's inconsequential.
Yeah.
I loved that.
I was going to ask you, what did you think of Melina Mercouri?
You know what's funny is I knew her from Greek Politics.
Oh, okay.
And not so much as an actor. That I don't know why I knew her from that, but I knew her. She was big in Greek. politics.
Big on Greek. You're big on Greek politics.
I don't know why it was that I knew her from that. Probably one of the rabbit holes that I went down, and but I had not seen her in anything. She's Jules Desan's girlfriend. They had lived together since 1955. They didn't marry until, what was it, 65 or 66. And then they stayed married until her death in 94.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah. It was, and on the car was a fun fact. I think there was either 1,300 or 3,100 of those made.
Yeah, no, that was a super, they're if you get a one in good condition now, they're $80,000 to $100,000. Yeah. And famously, that model of car was the car that Kennedy got assassinated on.
Oh, that's a, that brings it down.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ. And this I is thought 64. You would have
known that, Brian.
That was a year later. I'm not a car guy, so I don't. And yeah, you're right. This was the inspiration for Mission Impossible.
Yeah. Yeah, this is the heist itself is breaking into the floor that has the alarms on it and dangling a guy from the ceiling to lift up the glass case and the whole thing.
The lifting up the glass case, holy shit.
Well,
was
you have the part where he bumps into the mannequin, you're like, holy shit.
That was tense. He does such a good job with that. It was so fun. And I didn't know that he was the director of Rafifi.
He's my heist guy.
Oh, he had mentioned it. I think that's why I knew it.
Oh, I probably
blacklisted in the 1950s. Went to Europe, made a bunch of movies and stuff like that. But just to me, the king of the heist movie.
Yeah, and I thought that what was her first name, Malini or Malini? Something weird.
It's Melina Mercouri.
Melina.
She was a great cougar.
She was a wonderful cougar. She was great in that role. I know that she was a big French singer.
And there, she had a great line like, do you ever regret that I'm a nymphomaniac or something like that? Exactly. I thought that was a great line.
And he has there to repeat it. And she's a nymphomaniac.
A ton of great lines in this. The ping pong ball on the floor. When they did
music. Yeah.
Holy shit. Yeah. For each bounce. It was fucking crazy.
One of my favorite introductions of a character in any movie was when they first show Maximilian Schell and he's walking down a Paris street with a man on his, you know, with his hand on a guy's back. They meet a policeman, a gendarme, and as they kind of pivot and he keeps his face to the gendarme with the guy. He's got a gun in the guy's back.
Yes.
And then he's, oh, where's the hotel? Where's the hotel? He puts the guy in the car. He hangs the gun off, like, the door handle of the car. You know, I fear intelligence more than I fear guns, so therefore I don't fear you.
Yes.
And the guy goes to grab the gun, and he just slaps his hand. It was just one of my favorite. Just, he's so fucking good in this.
When he put the gun in the door handle and then went down to tie his shoes.
Fucking awesome.
Yeah. So what I do know is that the short story that this was taken from is about Arthur Simpson.
Oh, okay.
It's a POV from Arthur Simpson. The heist is really not a big deal in the story.
Oh, Rafifi was like a total like trash dime novel, you know, that Desan extracted this great story from, you know.
Maximilian Schell's character was an American tough. That's what they called him. So he did a wonderful job creating this crew. And I love the idea that they were nobodies. So nobody had a record.
Yeah. And then they make reference to his Swiss precision.
Yes.
You know, I thought that was really cool. Like he was a watch or something like that.
Always. Kept going on the Swiss. Maximilian Schell, I just loved. And I'm becoming a bigger fan the more I keep seeing him. It was a fun little flick. I was surprised. The psychedelic opening...
Yeah,
it kind of throws you a little bit because you're thinking like, oh, this is going to be like, you know, a 60s kind of a light comedy or something like that. But the heist is one of the best heists out there. I loved it.
Yeah, you get that intensity. And that was actually people criticized because you get this, the tone of the film doesn't match the heist.
Yeah.
Which is kind of the centerpiece of the table.
And it's really weird with the silence during the heist, too. It's very jarring. You notice there's no noise. It's like,
Wow.
It's got to be a Hallmark, right?
Yeah.
Again, this sounds my heist guy, so.
It was a fun film. I'm glad I watched it. It was certainly not a waste of time. Yeah.
Deservedly, so.
Yes.
Liked it?
Yes.
Is it the first time you watched it, or did you watch it when I told you to watch it?
No, it's the first time I actually watched it. I went first time for me, too. And I got to the beginning, and I'm like, okay, and it was all the psychedelic things. I'll watch it later. And actually, like I said, the beginning kind of
turned the opening kind of turned you off.
This is Lance's choice?
Yes. But I will say next week's is going to excite you, too.
Ooh.
I believe.
Am I going to have a heistgasm, Brian?
I don't know. You might.
All right. Well, that being said, I got a heistgasm out of this one. It was...
Please don't let that become a thing.
It was...
Hashtag heistgasm. It's trending.
One of my favorite heists of all time. Again, the tone, like Brian, you eloquently put, the tone of the rest of the movie doesn't kind of match the heist. But 4.5 for me. I mean, if Rafifi's the ultimate, then this one is just underneath for me, because it's
you know what? It's a good Euro comedy for the 60s. The heist was amazing, but I'd still give it a 4.
Yeah.
Yeah, especially against Rafifi.
I'd say solid 4, yes.
Okay. All right, that was Top Copy. Give it a watch. Let us know what you think.